It's time to step into the Coming Out Lounge, a cool, safe space to be true to your sexual self, with your host, Rick Clemens. Rick has helped hundreds of people come out of the closet, and now each week he's bringing you cool insights for loving and accepting yourself, boosting your self-confidence, and living a guilt-free, purpose-filled life on the other side of the closet doors. Cuddle up with yourself and get ready for heartwarming coming out stories, ideas for living authentically, and tips for being fully self-expressed. Now here's your host, Coming Out Coach Rick.
Hey, 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 closet dwellers and closet busters. It's me, Rick Clemens, the guy that helps you simplify your life to make those big, bold moves, whatever the closet is you're coming out of. And you know, if you've been listening, it is Pride Month, and we're celebrating a whole month of Pride, maybe going a little bit even into July by celebrating what it means to be LGBTQ, or even to celebrate who you are in the world in your own way. So we're having double interviews all month long. We're showcasing people from all walks of life in their coming out journeys. And I have to say today, I'm really, really, really touched by the person that I'm about to introduce you to, because she's got a beautiful book that tells a story that I'm not going to get into because I want her to share it, but I just want you to imagine yourself if you were living in New York in the 80s, right at the beginning of what you thought was a really beautiful fairy tale courtship and wedding. And then suddenly, as you set up your condo and everything, you start to discover something's not quite right. Now, it isn't the new baby that just came along, but something else has happened. And suddenly you're faced with some really devastating betrayal in your life. And then very shortly, everything you knew disappeared. And for the next 25 years, you kind of stood in your own stuff going, how can I do this? How do I get through it? And not only how do you do it, but not even being sure how you want to share what's going on for you. And what we're talking about today is really, truly a coming of age, being in a new world of tolerance, and finding yourself and how you get through these moments when you're the one on the other side of the closet door. And I'm going to bring a really beautiful person in right now to the Coming Out Lounge. Her name is Maggie Knight, and she's going to share her story about the truth that she had to face to finally set herself free so that she could heal herself and in her own way go out and heal the world at large. Welcome to the Coming Out Lounge, Maggie.
Thank you so much, Rick. It's really an honor to be here.
Well, and it's really an honor to have you here. And thank you to Alan Cohen, who introduced us, who is actually another person who's on one of the interviews this month. He's a really great guy, and he and I have been friends for a while, and you and him have been friends for quite a while. Yes. And he kind of connected the dots so that we could start to really share this. I'm going to try to keep from getting emotional.
If I may, I know Alan actually, through my late husband, who, just to bring this around to the beginning, was a great, terrific person. So there's that.
Yeah.
You know, and he went to Brown University where with Alan's sister. And therein lies this sustained connection and friendship. So good and bad come out of good and bad. You know.
Well, And through all of this is where we start to find the humanity of all of us and the beauty of what we can do when we go through some of the toughest things in life. You know, I'm going to just kind of let you start telling your story, because I didn't want to give it away. It's such a powerful story. Just go ahead, Maggie.
Okay, I'll try to keep this compelling and as short as possible so we can talk about, delve into the issues of the story. Back in the late 80s, I met a man. I thought it was the man of, as Rick has said, the perfect man, the man of my dreams. And I was looking for a perfect man. And this is part of the story because, and this is part of the coming out story, because I had only one brother, one sibling who I knew was disabled growing up. And I never, my parents never would acknowledge it. Back in the day, there was no attention to spectrum behavior or disability. And so I needed to find someone I thought could heal our family's wounds. And that would have been the man I met, in the form of John Andrew, my husband. We had what I thought was a terrific marriage, and it was all I needed and wanted, and very sexually charged and frequently charged sexually. So there was no doubt that of his love and desire for me as a woman. I'm leading into something, as you can see.
Yeah.
And he was a professionally successful guy, sort of a bold-faced journalist at only 35. Well, when I met him, he was just pushing 30. And we had two children, one daughter. And then a few years later, I got pregnant again. And right about that time, he didn't feel too well. And little things, rashes, this was about 1989. And he, you know, got a little depressed, started to see a psychiatrist, started to have some coughs. But it was all attributable to stress, according to doctors. When I had the baby, the second baby. He disappeared from the delivery room to get dinner. This was John, not the baby. He wasn't able to eat dinner yet. And I looked at the doctor, and the doctor looked at me, and we said, what's that about? And then he came back when the baby was, it was a pretty quick delivery. And when we got home, John couldn't really get off the couch. He was exhausted. He turned 36 on his birthday, July 10th, 1990. We went to a restaurant in Greenwich Village, and he nearly collapsed and couldn't form words.
Wow.
We got home. He was feverish. The next morning, panicked, called the doctor. The doctor said, I'm supposed to see him as a psychiatrist in the morning. I didn't know what to expect. I got John up in the morning and he was fine. So I thought, oh, it must be a 24-hour thing. He was cool. He was lucid. I sent him off to work at his newspaper, the Wall Street Journal. Before that, he did go to the psychiatrist as expected. And then I went out and saw someone for lunch and was really kind of getting out of my postpartum stuff and everything. Came back to a bunch of phone calls saying the psychiatrist said, I didn't like the way he was acting too much. He wrote the wrong information on his check, which I said I always write the wrong information on my checks. I was trying to deny anything could be wrong. Right. And then he had sent him to the hospital for brain scan. On the brain scan, then the other calls, flashing lights on the old fashioned answering machine were from doctors. Mrs. Andrew, call us. I got one of the docs on the phone. He said, Mrs. Andrew, we're sorry. We think your husband has lesions on his brain. We think it's lymphoma. I was like, what do you mean? What's that? He said, it's a cancer. We don't know. And he was calming me down. And at which point, and people don't believe this, but this is the truth. This was 1990. In the 80s, I had been an actress, a dancer, a waitress. I had lost lots of friends. And it all came to me at that moment that there was a lot wrong with those people before they sort of disappeared into somewhere else. And then we heard they had died. And I asked the doctor, could this be AIDS? And the doctor said, I think he assumed that I knew something that I didn't report. Well, this was not a marriage that was, you know, mutually expressed sexually, or maybe John was hanging out at some leather bars and but he wasn't.
Right.
And he said, why do you ask that, Mrs. Andrew? And I said, because everything's wrong. That is the story, essentially, Rick, that it was a shock.
Yeah.
I think that we can talk more about whether John knew this, you know, what was going down, but I didn't know. And I then reflect in the book, my book is called Now Everyone Will Know, because I didn't know what to do with AIDS as a young wife and mother in 1990, in the summer of 1990. And I went to John, I got him from the hospital. He was given originally 2 weeks to live. He had no T cell count. He was riddled with it. Mm. He had probably staved off in some emotional way until this baby was born, and was born as a whole baby. You know, I think that he probably didn't know what to expect. And I went to he was lying shivering in our bedroom, and I said, we're going to get through this. We're going to make it. I had no idea what was going to happen. And he said, now everyone will know Andrew has AIDS. And I said, why do you say that, John? He said, because you're going to tell them. Mm. Effectively, he had no realistic expectation of what I was going to go through, or what even was going out there on the streets of Hoboken, where we lived, just, you know, across the river from New York City, or in San Francisco, or anywhere else. So to kind of fast forward, I found out when John was in the hospital, that he had, but first I asked him how he got HIV AIDS, and he asked me if I slept with a gay friend of ours. I had not. Mm-hmm. And then he said, this was the man I had trusted, and man I had married, and man I respected. And then he said, I asked him again, I had my wits about me. You know, I had a 3-week-old baby and I had to press on. He said, I slept with men in LA. That was where he lived before New York. Mm-hmm. And we didn't get much further than that. What I forgot to write in the book, and you do forget sometimes as you're writing, I did ask him if he loved any of them, and he said no. That was important to me. But the extent of his activities, and another interesting part of the book that I won't take the time to describe here, but I do think it's very, very resonant and important to just mention, is that I had the night before I learned of the confirmation of John's AIDS test, which was positive, and the next one I had to go for my own test. And by the way, I did not contract the disease. So that's critical to know.
Yep.
I went through in my mind, I rewound some of our days together, and there were things that I missed. Now, I don't think they were obvious, and I don't think that I was not very busy being pregnant and managing a child. But there was one thing I remember of him standing with a lifeguard he'd taken swimming, and I think I sensed an attraction between them, and I think I dismissed it. Mm. And so I had this reflection. But then the years after, in the book, I describe shutting down, protecting those kids from the stigma of AIDS, and not just the stigma of AIDS, which was very electric and still exists, but also my own shame, my own... Rick and I had a little bit of a conversation, if I may, and I think people who are your fans know this, that your wife was less concerned about the fact that you had been in gay connection, but more you were not faithful. In my case, it was not that. It was that this man had desired me and men, and I had a very hard time accepting that. And of course that he wasn't faithful, but it was that. And this might have been because of the disease and how it altered him and how ashamed he was of it.
Well, I think people go both ways. I think I'm so glad you brought that up, Maggie, because this is the thing. And there's no cookie cutter way around this. I mean, everybody's experience is different. But I think for most straight spouses, there's going to be infidelity if it exists. And I have worked with clients who have not had any infidelity. They have just said, I know who I am. They've never experimented. And then they make this grand announcement. But of course, you, the straight spouse, are going to go, really? How do you know this then if you've never had any experience? So there's that route. Then there's the infidelity. Then there's the how much infidelity. That can be a whole nother thing. And then there can be the betrayal of, if you knew this, why didn't you tell me? So anyone who's listening to this, and we've done a couple of shows around this before, but I love how articulate you're being with this, Maggie, because it's really setting the tone up. There's going to be lots of different ways you may go through this.
Right.
The first thing you may feel like that's the thing. And then suddenly you're going to go, but wait, this also affects me. Oh, wait, now this affects me. And then, so be open to, it's so interesting to me how similar the path is for the straight spouse and the spouse coming out. Right. Your feelings are almost identical. And that's something that gets missed oftentimes is I may feel a victim because I've been trapped in this lie. On the flip side, my spouse now feels like a victim because she's been lied to. And then the next thing you may feel is like, oh my God, I'm so angry. Well, I was really angry with myself for not having done, you know, and been some things I didn't want to be. On the flip side, my spouse is really angry too. And I think this is what's so powerful is when we can grasp onto these things, like you said, Maggie, and start to go, okay, we're all going to experience things. Now let's see how we can begin to go through it.
And so I agree with you. I mean, I think I do want to say, but I want to hear more from you because this is terrific for me. It's my first opportunity talking about with someone who might have been my husband, but for that game changer of AIDS.
Right.
The game changer of AIDS was huge because obviously it was called the gay plague. Everyone was afraid of it. And still, I'm sorry, but I still see the fear.
All the time.
It was also lethal. It was also, he could have killed all of us. So talk about the anger seething. Did you know you could have killed all of us, you know, and there's that's not so disconnected from behavior or what can result from behavior. I mean, you can get sick in a lot of ways, but AIDS was AIDS.
Yep.
I do think that also we talk more about this. And I think what's felt on the part of straight spouses is that we are not listened to.
Well, you're not heard. You're not given.
We were afraid to talk, but even if we talk in a pro LGBTQ age, which God love it, it's great.
Yep.
The suffering of the straight spouse, the situation of the straight spouse, and the victimization of the straight spouse is sort of like, oh, come on, really? How bad really is it?
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. So I think there's, everybody suffers in this. Everybody has, how do we all get through that is the question.
Mm-hmm.
Like doing this, I think.
And I hear more often than not, you know, everybody celebrates the person who comes out because they're being real, they're being authentic. I get that. But in the midst of it, there's the spouse and the children and the in-laws. And it's always, it's very similar to when I'm on a PFLAG panel talking, you know, at colleges and universities, it's those people now go into their closet because they now got to come out and go, okay, this is me. Now I'm a parent or a spouse or a child of a gay or lesbian or bisexual or transgender. And that's when they kind of get lost unless they have somewhere to talk. And the straight spouse is a voice that really does get lost in this thing more often than it should, you know,
which is not to say, to be fair, because we all need voices, which is really why I wrote Now Everyone Will Know, because I just had to. People say, well, do you have to write a book? You could have talked about it. Actually, I couldn't, you know, there was no way to really embark on a cogent conversation. And I worked in publishing and I knew the power of the written word. And I just sat down and it sort of wrote me, you know, but I think we also have to acknowledge if we're fair and open and out of the closet, how people like you also weren't heard or were afraid to be heard or were afraid to say who you were. There's a lot of this that we all experience and are victimized by.
Well, and that's something that does come up quite a bit. And as you and I talked before I got on the podcast with you, you know, I'm not the most popular guy in certain circles because everybody thinks I'm like out there to destroy lives. I'm not. I'm out there to have people get heard, including the straight spouse. And the toughest piece that I get called on the most is, you know, until you've stood in my shoes, you can't really understand me. And until I've stood in your shoes, I can't really understand you. But what I do understand is I know this causes hurt. I know this causes pain. But simultaneously, those of us who hid in the closet, we're standing in the same hurt and pain.
Right.
Now, there is a shift. I will agree. There's a shift. And I have a really hard time working with people that are in their 20s and stuff that are still in potentially embarking on, I'm going to stay in the closet and go through a marriage. And I've worked with a few of those, and I've tried to work with them on, why are you doing this? Now, I will, in their defense, and it's rare that I even have those people show up, but I do. Most of them, it's a cultural thing. So it will be someone who's, you know, Indian or Pakistani or Asian. You know, it's a lot of cultural people that show up this way. Or we can go the whole religious route too, where my faith and everything says, this is how I'd have to show up. So,
or people are just ashamed of it. They're still ashamed.
Yes, there's still a huge amount of shame.
We understand that. We understand that. It's legitimate.
But your story is the twist that is the harder part, because as you said, Maggie, there was a possibility, God rest his soul, that he could have hurt all of you.
Right. That's right.
And in those times, and I was one of the guys in that time frame, because I came out first. I came out in 1982 to my parents at 19 years old, and they said no.
Yeah.
And then I went back in the closet. But all through that time, I got married in 1986. I wasn't being faithful, but I was being safe.
Mm-hmm.
That's the difference. Mm-hmm. I was as safe as you could be. I mean,
yeah,
there was always condoms and all that stuff. But this is the thing that scares me the most, is when I hear somebody. And I just was working with a client who says, yeah. And I said, so let's talk the real stuff. Let's talk about it. When you're having sex, are you being safe? Are you, you know, are you bottoming? Are you topping? What's going on? And he says, no, I'm not. And I said, you know, you're holding a pistol to your own head, but what you're forgetting is that pistol is now pointed at your wife.
Right.
And I said, that's, you know, how fair do you think that really is? And
what did he say?
He said, I get that. He says, I'm so miserable. I wish the pistol would just go off on me, so then I wouldn't have to endure this. And I said, it's sad. I didn't say that to him, but it's sad that his space is, I'm still not good enough to be who I am. And that's where we're working right now.
I'm sorry to interrupt. I'm really fascinated by this. How does it justify in his mind, if he just hates himself, why does he want to destroy? Why does he want to risk destroying the lives of his people he loves?
Exactly. And that's the question I asked him, Maggie.
Yeah.
I said, you know, what are you going to accomplish? Now, let's kind of just break it down. Let's compartmentalize all this. So there's you, there's your wife, your kids may not be affected by it, except that if they lose their dad and then they find out this other thing, I said, you have to start really looking at the bigger effect of all this. And that was actually when I got him to turn and go, okay, I haven't really looked at it from that perspective. I said, you know, and his kids are fairly young. They're 8 and 11. I said, you don't seem to realize that what you're doing right now by not saying anything is going to hurt your wife if you were to contract anything. Okay. Especially if they're not having a lot of sex, but enough that it could happen.
You can only have it as one time.
Exactly. That's all it takes is one time. But I said, here's the thing with your kids. You're setting the tone for this is okay to live this way. It's okay to be out of integrity. It's okay to lie. And trust me, I'm a guy who knows this. I have thought about it. And that's why when I came out, my kids were very young, and I've had numerous, numerous conversations with my kids. They're now 18 and 22.
Right.
And we have all those conversations about integrity and honesty. And that's what's helped them be able to come and talk to me in very open terms about what's going on in their lives. But the unfortunate thing that people don't do is they don't really start connecting the dots. And I think that's what you've done so beautifully with your book, is help people start really connecting the dots that, yes, we are on different sides of the closet door, so to speak, but not really. We're all in the same closet when this stuff comes up in our lives.
And we are. And I think that I really just don't know why. I know that there's shame involved. I understand it so viscerally how you can be ashamed. I have had so much shame in my own life, but I just don't know. There, I see a lot in the, I talk to people also, I'm in straight spouse groups, and people have contacted me with the same situation. I'm sure you have the same thing.
Yep.
And there's the term that's used is for both parties is sort of a narcissism or self-indulgence.
Mm-hmm.
Are we selfish people if we don't What is it about us? You know, if we're leaving our families, hypothetically, not either of us or whatever, anybody we know, but if we're hypothetical, case in point, you're leaving your family. You don't want to be honest about who you are. You don't want to tell the truth. You're doing things that might hurt your family. Is that, you can't label that, but is there a lot of discernible self-entitlement, self-indulgence, narcissism? And don't we have to take a look at that? You know, we are who we are. If we're, in my belief, I'll say it here, you know, I think if you're a homosexual, you're a homosexual woman or man, or you could be bisexual, but you know this, is who you are. Yeah. So denying that to other people, which you at one time had to do, to do. And so part of my book is about that shift in society, which I think has opened up for us the opportunity in most places, in most cultures, not in all, as you say, and certainly not everywhere in the country and not in every family. I mean, but you have enough bandwidth support, you know, to come be honest, live your life the way you might like to live it, but at least live your life honestly and say, this is who I am.
And the honesty piece I find really powerful when a straight spouse gets that for themselves too. And when a gay spouse has to embrace that your straight spouse is now being really honest with you. I cannot have anything to do with you. I cannot do this. It's not pretty. I get it.
Yeah.
But at least they're being honest, at least in where they are. It's, you know, it's, you've been dishonest. You know, I'm raising my hand here, you know, saying I've been dishonest about my past before I came out to my wife. So if she's being really honest with me that she can no longer be in a relationship with me, yeah, it's going to hurt, but man, at least she's being honest. That's what this all hinges on, is let's be really honest. Let's come to the table with our truths and how we can do it. I had a straight spouse that I worked with a couple of weeks ago who said, you know, I wish my spouse would just be completely honest with me, because I'm ready to be honest with her that I'm okay with you being a lesbian.
Yeah.
But what I really want to know is, let's be honest. Then does that mean we're done or we're not? Because I need that honesty piece. I don't have a problem with her being a lesbian, but I need the rest of the honesty there. And I think that's where things get really complicated.
I think we really feel disrespected when people aren't honest with us. Mm-hmm. You know, you're asking for honesty. You hope you had an honest relationship. What hurts second to be almost being killed, you know, was lack of honesty.
Yes.
What do you think of me? How, you know, it's a tough thing to have to hear, but I'd rather you respected me and told me.
Yeah.
I had asked him in the book. I asked him when we were dating, there was something I thought I had been with a lot of dancers, and it was very sort of something very elegant. I didn't think he was gay, you know, but I was sort of like needed to know. I asked him if he'd slept with men. And he said no. So he had never been honest. Now, again, in reflection, looking back a quarter of a century, I forgive him for that. It was a terrible time for people to be honest in the 70s, 60s, 70s.
So I'm curious, Maggie, since you brought this up, you know, you're very open and you're very, you know, you.
Now I am.
Now you are. Yeah. So when you interact with someone in the straight spouse side of the thing who just is like, no, I will never forgive. I will never.
Right.
What do you say?
I'm very empathetic, and I will tell you why, Rick. Most people who say that are being treated badly by their spouse.
I agree.
That's
why. 100%.
When you see that, you see the dividing day of people who have healthy interaction with their spouses who've come out, whether they're women or men in relationships and marriages, there is sort of a spirit of let's do this together. Let's raise our kids together. Let's have a life. You have your life. I'll have mine, but we are going to do this.
Yep.
But the people who are constantly lied to, and these are the people for whom I feel great empathy. That's what, and I say, I relate to that. And I try to help them work through it. I'm in a group. I'm not as you are. I'm not a life coach. I'm not a counselor. You know, we're all sort of, we've all been through it. That's sort of our credibility, right?
In these groups. But you know what, to your point right there, you are a counselor. You are a coach, because I hate that these titles come up, and yes, we need titles, but what I have found in this work, both on both sides of the fence, the people that have been through this are the best people to get the help from. It's not necessarily a therapist. It's not necessarily, not necessarily a coach, except somebody like me. Guys can identify with me. It's like, okay, he's been through this. He's had this experience. He's, for most part, had a very successful, you know, relationship with his spouse. So there's things that people see in what I've done. no differently than you're a consultant and people see you as a, what you can do as a consultant. It's kind of the same thing. And, and I encourage people so much to go, you know, they're like, oh, I could never show my face at a group like that. I'm like, then you're actually doing yourself a disservice. I know everybody does it their own way.
Right.
But those groups are so powerful, you know, whether it's a PFI group or a straight spouses group and, you know, all the different ones that are available, just if for no other reason to go, okay, there are people just like me.
Exactly. You know, you don't, especially as from an AIDS related perspective, AIDS was largely a gay man's disease for a very long time. It's now, you know, 50% or I think it's like 35%, sorry, of new AIDS patients in New Jersey are women. So women in marriage are being infected more. There's more vigilance on the part of openly gay men and young gay men, not 100%, but there's more vigilance, right?
Right.
But I think that these people who I meet, Rick, and I think this is just about human, this is regarding human decency and diplomacy and being in, good in a relationship. They're being treated badly. They're being treated badly by their spouses who are withholding or not telling the truth or being, are they punitive? You know, don't tell Susie, or if you tell Susie, I'll do X. You know, their families are beating them up.
It's really putting a lot of pressure on someone. And I actually spoke on a college stage this week about this and saying, if you go to someone, if you're coming out and you go to them and you share this with them, and then you say, but don't tell anybody. That puts a whole lot of pressure on that person, because what you just gave them was something that probably going to want some help with.
Right.
Whether it's a best friend, whether it's a parent, whether it's a spouse, whatever it is. And I think it's unfortunate that people will do that, except all of us humans do that sometimes.
Right. That's right.
What we don't understand is you just kind of handed them a fully loaded Samsonite piece of luggage and said, okay, now carry this for me. And then you kind of wash your hands of this. That's not fair. It's never been fair in my book. And I always encourage clients or spouses to say, you got to give them room to now go find where they can have their space, their time to process however that looks. Because the minute we start putting these boundaries about, okay, well, I'm going to say this and you can't say that. And then, you know, da, 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 da. It just makes the unraveling of the relationship that much more difficult.
And the pain is searing. You know, it's like, I loved your question, because these people I see, and some people, and this is still on topic, but people now, more and more people come to the group whose spouses are transgender or dressing as at the other sex that they with sex they weren't. And they deal with this. And so it's so it can be in some ways it's very visible what's happening. And still those people say, don't tell so-and-so, or I'm just doing this at home, or I'm just, this puts an enormous burden on
Because it then puts them deeper into their closet that they now have to come out of.
That's right.
You know? And
they're also, it gives them a lot of shame. You don't want to be ashamed. If you're ashamed, we're going to be ashamed.
Exactly. That's a big piece of it. And I'm glad you said it, because there's so many people, myself included, that there was a lot of shame around this. And that was the turning point for me, where I was just like, okay, I'm not going to feel shame about this. This is who I am, plain and simple. What I did feel shame about was that I didn't have the balls to do it sooner, but there was a cultural, societal piece that was like, you can't be this. This is gross. This is ugly. This is all this.
Right.
And now I feel like it's shifting, and I hope it continues, because I would much rather people be honest and go through the pain of enduring being gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, whatever it is, then to go through the dishonesty, maybe possibly the infidelity, and then still have to go through the same thing they're going to already go through. You're like adding two additional, three additional layers, whatever it is, when you say, okay, I'm just going to hide in this closet. Now, that's not to say that I know some people, that's the best they can do is I'm just going to hide in my closet and I'm going to have to try to live a double life. Because that's where they are in that moment. But the more we can help people go, no, do you realize what this is doing? You're perpetuating this thing. You're perpetuating people getting hurt. I know we can't ever heal all of it. But those of us who see this now, you and I included, that can really talk logically to people and go, you know what? Just be who you are. It's okay.
That, I think, is it. Be who you are. To thine own self be true. These are things we're taught. But, you know, to your point, I can never say enough, I feel, when I talk to people and I talk to media, I understand how people can't, you know,
yes.
I get it. I feel the sweat on my palms and my heart beating when you're afraid to say something, you're afraid to let the cat out of the bag, you're afraid to alter people's lives, right? I think the question is, and I get this question a lot, would you do it differently? Would I now than I did 25 years ago? Or I probably not. You know, I think AIDS is still a polemic, a disease, mm-hmm. but I think had it not been AIDS related, I would be more open to John's, what I call, some people don't believe in bisexuality. I believe John was bisexual. I don't mm-hmm. know how you feel about this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know a lot of people don't take any credence in it. They think that it's, people are either one or the other, and that's a whole nother subject.
Yeah.
But I believe that John was bisexual. But I, you know, I just think that, I don't know. I just think,
I
would have accepted it better. I think my point is, when you talk to younger people today or people who are wrestling with this,
mm-hmm.
and I think there are people who have all kinds of cultural roadblocks, and but still, it is easier now, which is why I was able to write the book and tell the story, because there's a point in that book that I looked around, I looked up from my ostrich hole, my head was in a hole. I was like, I'm as bad as I can't talk about it. No one can know. Also at the same time, my kids had grown up and I was so fiercely protecting them. I was afraid my son played football. I thought if he bleeds on one guy in that field, somebody says, you know, that guy's father died of AIDS. Did you know that? I didn't want him to deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
That's different from saying, you know, that guy's father is gay, or do you know he was
yeah.
gay? But I think
to
today,
a point, I mean, there are still people who you say, oh, his father is gay, and somebody go, oh, that means you're gay. You know,
so
things
absolutely.
Get perpetuated. You
these
know?
Kids, children of gay of people of known gay parents
yeah.
go through that all the time. And oftentimes they often worry that they themselves worry that they themselves are gay
yeah.
when they're not.
No.
But they
and
feel
I've watched my two kids go through this. I mean, my kids, as I said, were really young when this happened, and both girls, and they have both dated girls. They've been very open about that. My oldest one is beyond that. She's definitely pretty prone to guys. I'm not saying it's out of the question that there could be a girl that would sweep her off her feet, but they're both in the space of, I just love who I love.
Yeah.
Now, my youngest one is definitely very bisexual. She stands on that, and she goes through the challenges there because people don't get it. But we've talked many, many times about it, and I truly believe that's what she is. I don't have any doubt in my mind. But that's where people have a really hard time with this stuff. In fact, one of my good friends, Dr. Joe Court, just wrote an article about men's anuses don't have a sexual orientation, and it's getting huge play because this suddenly becomes something that, well, but you either are gay or you're not. I'm like, we're sexual organs.
Yeah.
We are sexual beings. And just because maybe that's something that brings you pleasure doesn't necessarily mean you're gay. And
right.
I know guys that I have worked with who we have literally come to the point of, okay, so you enjoy sex with guys as much as you enjoy sex with girls, but you want to make a life. You want the emotional connection. You want all of that stuff with a woman.
Yeah.
So they're not even completely bisexual, because bisexual
right.
could be you could make a life with a person of the
right.
opposite or the same sex
right.
and be intellectually, emotionally, all that stuff connected as well. And so I think this is where the constructs of what we know as sexuality in society
right.
are being so challenged today, because
yeah.
people don't know how to really handle this. And that's
well, I think two things.
Happens.
I mean, I think there's marriage, right? There's this,
yep.
whatever, however we look at marriage, gay marriage, straight marriage. Marriage is a commitment.
Mm-hmm.
To me. I like to think of it as being a complete commitment. And I think whoever you are in a marriage, my choice for marriage is and would be, and I have a longstanding partner. I did not get married again, but I am faithful. To me, it is a monogamous, it's monogamous. And so that's my point of view on that. No, and everyone's like that. And I totally get that. I do, and I'm going to say something that's rather inflammatory, and I don't mean for it to be, but I'm an older person now. And when I look at the fluidity, sexual fluidity of young people, I worry about that. It's the other side of the coin, if you will. You know, we mm-hmm. were closeted and we were ashamed and felt like it was an evil situation to care for our own sex or to, but the other side of that is to think, I'm going to love who I'm going to be with who I want to be with, and I'm going to try everything. And that for some people has got to be confusing also, but that's just me. I'm from an old other era. You know, I don't even know the world's changing so much.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that there's, you know, a pansexual or cisgender.
Yep.
And,
yep.
and I get that. But I also think that when it comes down to the relationship you have, the one you choose to have,
mm-hmm.
and you may have bring children into it, it's good to sort of,
yes.
I'm a great believer in routine for children. And
yep.
Yep. And that's how I've lived my life, essentially.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's a piece that every one of us has to come to that truth for ourselves, you know. And I've been doing this now for almost 7 years, been on a lot of panels and stages talking about this. And even as close as I am to this, there's still times that I'm like, okay, well, how do I feel about that?
Yeah. You know?
Because there is so much, you know, in flux right now. And in ways, I find it really beautiful.
Yeah, I do
too. In other ways, I find it like, okay, that's great, but how do you keep yourself in check? And how do you ensure that you're doing what's good for you, which is whatever you want to do? We all run our own lives and own our own lives. But at the same time, how does that fit the social construct of what's best for us in our consciousness and our planet? And I'm not saying there's anything wrong. It's just
one of those questions that I put out there,
you know? And as I've watched my own daughters go through this, I've realized there is a fluidity to love and stuff that's a lot different than I was raised on.
Right.
But there's some beauty to it too. But I also see some of the hurt they've gone through because of this.
Yes.
Because part of that challenge, and actually I have a client right now who's going through this. He was married for 6 years. He got divorced. Wasn't because he was gay. As he was, you know, post-divorce for the first couple of years, he suddenly, you know, had an experience or two with guys. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't consider himself completely gay. He's like, I'm in the fluid state right now. Mm-hmm. What brings up then is people don't know how to identify with that, which is their stuff. It's their stuff. I get
or how
that.
To explain it or how to or explain, how to
explain it.
It.
Right. Yeah. So then a lot of what we're working on is, you know, he doesn't really care, but yet he does, because he's like, I don't know how to show up. I know who I am. I know what I'm enjoying. Yes, this is what he's doing right now. But it's those sort of things that I'm not sure the next generation is really getting that. Yes, who cares? You and I are going to be gone another 20, 30 years, whatever, right?
Yeah, but we would leave our kids with some firm footing, you know?
Well, yeah, exactly. I want the next generation to really go, okay, it's cool to be what you're doing, but get really firm on it so that we don't create a whole new, you know, generation of more fucked up people.
Or more disease, because people are not being honest. They don't know who they are. They're slipping and sliding.
Yeah.
I'll do it this, but I'm not going to do this. And certainly the great strides that have made in surviving a disease like AIDS, mm-hmm. and no cure yet, but you know, people are living full lives, is, you know, people have to take medication, or there has to be honesty when you're in a couple. If you have the disease, you want to, people say, look, I am HIV. I take this pill, whatever. You have to know, you know, AIDS didn't come from nowhere.
Right.
It came from, you know, a lot of, you know, sexual partners and people, and no one knew. And next thing, everybody, a lot of people had it. It was like and I'm not saying that sex, homosexuality or heterosexuality or bisexuality is disease. I'm saying that dishonesty, I think, and lack of knowing who you are and lack of disclosure, mm-hmm. can cause that. Mm-hmm. So firm footing in terms of understanding yourself.
You know, it is important. And the reason that I'm glad you brought that up, and I don't know why this triggered this, but I've had some instances with some straight spouses who really came after me. And especially when I make statements like, well, until you've stood in my shoes, you don't understand me. But I always say, and until I stand in your shoes, I can't understand you. But I also come back at them with, but aren't you glad you now know this, rather than maybe one day waking up and realizing you just got something handed to you that you can't do anything about, you know? And it could be you have AIDS, or you could have any of the sexual diseases that just go away.
Exactly. A number of things. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. And wouldn't you rather know now than to find out 20 years from now, after there's even more water under the bridge in this relationship?
Yeah. That's a big question.
You know,
and what do they say when you ask that question?
Some get really defensive.
Yeah.
Like, it's still not right. I'm like, I understand it's not right. But, you know, there's a piece of this where take the appreciation for why you now know. Yes, it's tough because you're in the tornado. You're in the anger. You're in the like, oh, my God. But what's the good about knowing now? You know, how can that be good?
Very important.
Because there is a piece of good in this. It could have saved your life. It could have caused you less hurt to know now than 20 years from now. You know, and I tend to get a lot of people. I mean, I would say right now the average age of my clients are 45 to 55. Most of them have been in marriages anywhere from 15 to 30 years. Well, if you knew at 15 years versus 30 years, how much more would you appreciate? Wow, I've got 15 more years of my life to now go figure this out. I think that's something that gets missed. And I'm not trying to like be the champion for love the gay spouse. I'm just trying
to. I think that's very important. Very important. To, you know, I think what it comes down to it, and, you know, in terms of discuss the coming out of the closet situation, to me, what keeps recurring for me is people being honest with each other.
Yes.
You know? And I think the issue is sometimes we don't want to face these things as the other, the straight spouse, mm-hmm. with the gay, our gay spouses have, I'm not in this crowd. My gay husband, bisexual husband, died of a terrible disease, kept himself closeted, was really ashamed. I didn't have the benefit, the opportunity to know, which I write about in the book. They would be having Thanksgiving dinner and now together with him, he and his lover, or I don't know, but wouldn't that be better than me being scared to death about possibly dying and then having to carry this terrible secret? But when we're married to the people we didn't think we were marrying at them for in the first place.
Yeah.
And in this case, let's say a wife or a husband is gay. Mm-hmm. We're forced sometimes to look at ourselves in ways we don't want to.
Mm-hmm.
And you get a lot of questions from people like, didn't you know, that you were married? And you know, mostly you don't actually. No. Sex life is pretty normal. People think when you're married to somebody gay and this sometimes people are married to gay people and the sex life stops. I know people whose sex life stops and the people are not gay. I know people who have great sex lives with gay partners. I mean, but there is this question you have and you get it a lot from people in a sort of almost an annoyingly frequent way.
Yep.
Didn't you know, or, you know, how do you feel? Or do you feel like maybe he liked men and used you as his beard? And you get these questions. Are you a fag hag? You know, this stuff. And you gotta put it out. You can't ignore saying that. You say, do I think I'm that? This is a kind of self-reflection that's required that people don't want to go through that.
No. Well, and I know a lot of straight spouses will then, when they are in the self-reflection, well, what did I do? You know,
it was my fault, or
it was
my
fault. How didn't I know? What did I do to cause this?
Have I not been feminine enough?
And this is always my biggest defense point for the straight spouse is the hardest part of this is when it's a same sex attraction, you don't have anything you can come back with. If it was another woman or if it was another man, you can go get in shape. You can be sexier. You can try better sex positions. You can do whatever.
That's right.
But you don't really have anything to work with there. You can't suddenly grow a penis or, not have one.
On the other hand, a little anecdote that's slightly humorous and not maybe surprising to you, but be surprising to people listening is people have said to me during the course of this, it's better that he was one interested in men because you'd have a rival if it were another woman, Mm-hmm. And I don't even think, any of it's good. I think they each are fraught with problems, There's a distinctly, but you might, to your point, you could, if you lost a little weight or baked a bunt or something, you could win back the guy who was straying with another woman. But to your point, when you're interested in a penis, you're going to go for that. And so, other people are a big problem of this honesty because, they shoot a lot of questions at you. You get a lot of comments and you have to know how to respond to those questions and comments from family, friends, readers, podcast listeners. You're putting yourself out there. You got to be ready. Yeah,
absolutely. So, wow, what a powerful time we've had here today, Maggie. And I love that you've shared yourself the way
you
did.
Thank you. This is great. And for me, it's great to, as I said when we started, it was great to talk to you because I have wanted so much. I've talked to a lot of my gay friends about this over the years, my gay male friends, but they are either married to men or not too many, honestly, are as open as you who were married to women at one time. And there aren't too many of those people.
No. And a lot of that is, the experience they've had,
That's right.
There's an interesting thing that happens when the gay spouse comes out. They will either not want to talk about it because of the experience that happened, or they continue to carry the shame with them. Even if they go on to lead productive lives, when it comes to talking about the past, it's very similar to the transgender experience. The transgender person pretty much says that person is dead to me. They won't talk about most of them won't tell you what their previous names were. They'll talk a little bit about stuff. Right. And it's a very similar thing. And, to each their own, I find it, I wouldn't be doing this work if I didn't find it, part of what healed me, that what I do gets to heal other people and help people, on both sides of the fence. But the biggest thing is, you got to find your own path and find the path that works for you as you did. You found a beautiful path of sharing and helping tell the story so that other spouses can really understand this. And that's why.
It helped me. First, it was my own healing. That was my purpose for writing. And then I found a lot of people who found the book and said, thank you for giving us a voice. Mm-hmm. People need their voices. Mm-hmm. They need to find them. Not everybody, but some people really do. They need to have support for that, I think.
Yeah. Well, I'm so glad you shared your story. And as we wind up here, first of all, I'm going to just kind of drop a little nugget that Maggie doesn't even know I'm doing. But the first two people who email me at rick@rickclemons.com, and that's C-L-E-M-O-N-S.com. But the first two listeners who email me that they listen to this podcast, I will send you a copy of Maggie's book.
Oh, thank you, Rick. That's great of you.
Yeah, I think it's a vital piece of the story. And too often, as I've said, too often, this side of the story does not get shared. And
too often.
If it does, it kind of gets pushed down as, well, yeah, but get over your shit.
That's right. Know? Exactly. Well said.
Only get over your shit when you're ready to go. And I was first to say that, yes, I know a lot of straight spouses who don't ever get over this. And there are times I want to say, okay, now it is time for you to get over your shit, but we all get over our stuff when we want to and if we want to. That's the only way. And that's nobody else has a right to tell us it's time for you to get over it.
That's right. Exactly. I agree with that.
And even though I'm in a space where my ex and I aren't in a good space to really have a relationship anymore, the last thing I'm going to tell her is to get over her stuff towards me, because I know what's going on is she's not over her stuff for herself. And it's hard to push somebody, and nor do we have that right. So as we wind up here, I know you've given a lot of perspectives and insights, but the question I always ask each guest who comes on the show is, if you could leave a piece of advice for someone who's listening, what would that thing be? And it can be about, you know, being a spouse, challenges of AIDS, any of that stuff.
I would just, you know, I think, first of all, I think talking to somebody who is a trained counselor and finding a good one is important. If you're starting to embark on this issue of any issue, can you tell the truth about what's happening in your family? Can you face the truth, which happened in your family? Can you face your own truth? Mm-hmm. That kind of helped. And I had the benefit of that. Mm-hmm. I think you have to find a few trusted friends or people who are going through what you're better, people who are going through what you're going through. And to Rick's point earlier, I found this straight spouse network late in my experience. I was in a support group when my husband was first sick, but we kind of disbanded it. This was back in 1990. Mm-hmm. Our husbands died. Finding people after being, as I call it, you know, very classically an ostrich, wanting to get away from it and just deal with my white picket fence life and not deal with my, you know, that was important for me to have my feelings legitimized and shared. I needed to know people were going through it. So I recommend that support groups.
Absolutely.
I also recommend that sometimes you have to look at people in your family. This is my last, I won't take the whole day, but I want to say, some people in your family will not support you doing what you're doing. Yep. They will criticize you. They will be angry with you. Mm-hmm. At some point, there's a right time that you need to know your own truth.
Yes.
Face your own truth and share your own truth. And it's not for everybody at the same time. Mm-hmm. It's not sometimes for a long time. But I believe you will know it if you're honest with yourself.
Absolutely.
And I also believe in being honest in relationships, as hard as that is.
It is. It's one of the toughest pieces of being in a relationship. But, you know, the overriding thing that I just heard Maggie say is get support, find your tribe, and know that you can stand up and say, okay, I don't have to play this the way you think I have to play it. I have to play this the way I have to play it.
That's right.
Be really honest about it.
So. And also be aware that you might hurt, you don't want to hurt other people, but you have to find the right space and time to express yourself and identify with how you're feeling and legitimize it and sanction it.
Yep, exactly.
Whatever it is.
Absolutely. Well, as you all can tell, Maggie and I could go on and on for hours.
What a way to spend a Memorial Day weekend.
Yeah. But you know what? It's great because this is really going to help somebody. And it's something that I can actually see bringing Maggie back on and talking.
I'd love to come. I'd love to talk to people. I think there are so many people out there, Rick, who need to hear this and hear you as well.
I have a little idea in my head of something that I think could be pretty cool. Maybe Maggie and I could put together a TEDx talk that between here on the stage and doing this could be so powerful to see both sides of the spectrums. So thank you again, Maggie, for being here and sharing yourself and being so honest and open. Her book is Everyone Will Know.
Now Everyone Will Know. Yeah, now as opposed to before. And no one knew for 25 years. One last thing. I know you have to go.
No,
I couldn't talk about John, my husband. I couldn't even say his name for years. So it didn't serve him to keep this a secret. Mm-hmm. Now, he was a very fine guy, by the way. And I can remember him that way, which is a gift to me and our kids. Because there was a lot great about him. And I didn't want him to be a ghost, you know?
And there's very few spouses, I think, that get to that space where they can appreciate that. You know, as much as, you know, my wife and ex-wife and I are having some things, it's actually more just typical divorced couple at this point than anything.
Fortunately, you know your kids and you have a good relationship with them.
Yeah.
And that's a really beautiful thing.
Yeah. So thank you again, Maggie. So appreciate it. And like I said, anyone listening, the first two people to email me at rick@rickclemens.com, I will be glad to get you shipped a copy of Maggie's book as my gift for just trying to have a little more impact here in the world. So
thanks so much. I hope everybody has a good weekend.
Yeah. And thanks, everyone. Enjoy Pride Month. And we'll be back with you in just another few days with another interview from our guests. So take care, everyone. So that's what we call in the podcast world a wrap, the end, finito, whatever you want to call it. That's the end of another episode of the Coming Out Lounge. I'm Rick Clemens, the Coming Out Coach, that guy that hopefully is helping you simplify your life so you can make some big, bold moves. And if you've been wanting to do just that, might I suggest that you hop over to the comingoutlounge.com website. On the homepage or on the episode pages, you're going to see a little icon that says schedule a discovery session. And I would love to have a chat with you. If you're kind of in that space of trying to figure out what's next, how you're going to do this, let's have a chat, you and me. We'll sit down for 30 minutes. We'll do it over the phone, via Zoom, via Skype, whatever works. And we'll have a chat about where you are in your journey. It's totally free, no obligation, but I'd love to just help you in any way that I can. It's kind of my give back to my listeners of the Coming Out Lounge. And as usual, I just want to say I love you. I appreciate you. I'm so glad that you're subscribers. And keep sharing this podcast. The more we share this, the better the world will be and the less homophobia and bigotry that will exist out there in the world with each step that we make. Finally, never, ever forget that if you want to give us a suggestion for a show or a guest or have a comment or have a question, call us at 949-371-8559. Again, 949-371-8559, and we'll listen to what you got to say. And with that, we're going to wrap it up. Have a great week, everyone. Take care.